This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's day two of our Project Milwaukee series, What's on Our Plate, which is exploring the kinds of foods grown and made in our city and state and the resulting impact this manufacturing sector has on our region's economy. Yesterday on the show, we heard about the history of food production in Wisconsin. Today, we'll talk about what's being grown and produced now. We'll start with an overview of Wisconsin's place at the food-producing table. Kyle Cherik is known to many of us here in Milwaukee as the host of the syndicated television show Wisconsin Foodie, currently in its third season. Kyle's a dedicated foodie. In addition to the show, he frequently gives public talks on various culinary topics and the farm-to-table trend. And you can often see him out and about at many of the region's best food emporia. But he joins us in the studio now. Kyle, welcome to Lake Effect.
Happy to be here.
Let's start out by having you give us a broad sketch of where food is in Wisconsin. What do we grow? What do we make? How does it fit into the national scene?
Well, we're a huge and I think sometimes too silent producer of food, and on a couple of different levels, one in the big ag sense, one in the packing and shipping sense. There's all the ancillary businesses that come off of that. And then from the organic and sustainability side, we're on the cutting edge, essentially, and the forefront of things that are happening nationally. A couple of salient facts that I always like to quote to people are from this wonderful Milwaukee 7 study that they did about a year ago. Wisconsin is actually fourth in the country for food manufactured products. So I think a lot of people would be shocked to hear that number. And Milwaukee, the region, what they define as the region, so I think that's the adjacent counties, if you pay the stadium tax maybe, let's put it that way, we're sixth in the nation for local food and agriculture. So on two levels, we're really much bigger than I think a lot of people perceive. As far as what we grow and what we then send out to the rest of the world to sort of have on their dinner plate, we're number one. Wisconsin is for beans, cheese, big surprise, cranberries. Everybody's seen the Ocean Spray commercials filmed up north. And then ginseng. We're number two only because of those subsidized California guys, and I would argue New Yorkers, for butter, milk, and cheese. And then we've got in third place, carrots, potatoes, peas, sweet corn. In fourth place, maple syrup, which was a real surprise to me. Oats and tart cherries. And then fifth, cucumbers and mint, which also, it's not like we're all used to driving out in country parts and seeing fields and fields of cucumbers and mint. And to go back to that, the number two in butter and milk and cheese and things like that, we have that position in the country partially because of a really antiquated federal subsidy that exists. And this is, when I share this with people, they just laugh. But post-World War II, when all of the dairy production essentially happened in Wisconsin, and it was starting to blossom in other parts of the country, the feds put in a subsidy for shipping dairy products. And so the further away, and this is the best part, this is the kicker, that you are from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, the less expensive or the more subsidization of the shipping of dairy products you get. So we all know now with the military-industrial complex of food that dairy, where it's basically taken from the cow, you know, where you milk the cow, is then processed in a myriad of places all over the country, and we're a big one for that, no question. But in those days, it was all about where does the fresh gallon of milk get milked, and then how do we get it to the people in Florida or South Carolina or California or Texas or what have you. So our dairy farmers are still fighting that in a way with their high quality of milk and the cost that it takes to ship it then to people who want to drink it.
Now, are they shipping it also to people who are processing it within the state, or is it more beneficial to them to actually ship it out of state?
Oh, no, most of it is processed where it's milked, basically for freshness. I mean, there's a cost effectiveness, obviously, but, you know, milk is not like wine. It does not get better with age.
No, it doesn't.
No matter how well you refrigerate it.
Right.
You hit diminishing returns pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly. Well, are there other industries that support food growing and processing here in Wisconsin and specifically in the greater Milwaukee area?
Well, the numbers are interesting on that, too. I mean, so we've got 253, according to this Milwaukee 7 study, food and beverages companies in the Milwaukee region. So it's a lot of people and a lot of things and a lot of industries happening that I don't think we're really aware of. And that goes everywhere from making the plastic bags or crinkle cutting the fries or milking the cows or growing the vegetables. Sustainability all the way through the most highly processed product. 14,000, close to 15,000 employees, almost $600 million in payroll happening in this Milwaukee region right here. It's 9% of our regional manufacturing base. So when people think about manufacturing, I think in Wisconsin and particularly the Milwaukee area, they think of the really big guys like Allen Bradley or Bucyrus or, you know, Case down in Racine and or Oshkosh that makes all, you know, all those big wonderful things when we go to war. But it's close to 10% of the overall manufacturing. It's not just steel. It's carrots and beans.
And all the things that are used to either package or process or grow or pick.
Oh, sure.
Carrots and beans.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But then there's another sort of silent industry that we have here is Kekkoman. So they're in Walworth, Wisconsin. 33 million gallons of soy sauce they produce on an annual basis, yearly, here in Wisconsin. So when you get your carry out or your Chinese delivery.
In that little package.
In that little package, exactly. In any city in America, the high likelihood that that soy sauce was fermented and then packaged and things like that within driving distance of downtown Milwaukee is extraordinarily high.
Now, do we also grow the soybeans that they ferment?
We do and we don't. It's not one of our biggest crops. We certainly do. Soy is a powerful cash crop across the Midwest. Where we sit and why our location ties into food manufacturing for the Midwest is provocative from a global scale. I was at a growing power conference, I don't know, 6 months ago or something, and they had this marvelous map up that I think either the UN or UNICEF or someone had produced. And it basically showed where on the globe is it cheapest, most profitable, least amount of natural disasters, soil quality, rainfall, nice people, you know, that kind of thing, in the world to grow things. In the Midwest, the breadbasket, the names that tick off in our heads all the time, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, a little bit of the Plain States, Illinois, obviously. If you drive anywhere south of Springfield in Illinois, the capital, it's all corn. And ADM Cocoa isn't there on accident. It wasn't because they got cheap land. It's because you can keep growing the stuff. And even though corn pulls out so much from the ground and puts so little back in, we've got such great fertile soil and such great rainfall and things like that, that this is the most profitable center to have it. In any event, we literally are the world's breadbasket.
We'll talk a little bit about the sustainability. You mentioned that we're right on the leading edge mm-hmm. of sustainable agriculture and sustainable processing. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, there's two sides or there's two parts of that story. One would be something like Organic Valley. So it's basically a dairy co-op that was started by seven renegade farmers at the end of the 70s, early 80s, who wanted to start doing organic dairy products, who didn't want to work with the big ag connectors and wanted to grow their cows and harvest the milk in a more natural way, essentially. They have now grown to 150 producers or growers, $527 million a year in gross sales. And I think they're kind of the definitive organic provider in, I don't just think, experts do, in the country. The next largest would be Dean Foods, which is a big ag conglomerate. Now, they're $6 billion in sales with all their products, and they've got something called Horizon that is their organic sort of antidote to an organic valley. There are layers or demarcations of organicness would be the PC way to do it. I would argue with my experience that Organic Valley is doing it more true to the mission than Horizon, for instance. And then on the urban sustainable agriculture angle, we are literally leading the nation, and that's by way of growing power and sweet water. Will Allen came to a claim in the last two or three years. He's been fighting the good fight, he and the rest of his team, proving something that we're all going to, I believe, need in the next 10 or 15 or 20 years is that we're going to need to feed people within a mile or 5 mile radius of where they live. And so taking old brownfield development, industrial buildings, and converting them to something where you grow healthy protein fish on one level, you grow hydroponic greens that clean the waste out of the fish water on another, and then tomatoes on the top. Sweetwater has taken that to a large-scale industrial level. Will, of course, being asked to be, you know, the farmer at the White House and I don't know if he turned Michelle Obama down, but they had him out for the interview. Because he had a good thing going here, one of Time's 100 most influential people of the year and winning the MacArthur Genius Award, which they don't just hand out. When we went to shoot with Wisconsin Foodie, a show at Sweetwater, we had to put off our shooting date because the New York Times was there. Both literally have international visitors coming to see how they do it. And then the third component of that really is a dairy farm like Crave Brothers. So they have 1,100 acres and some crazy amount of cows. They have less cows per happy cow California quota per acre. 40% of them, they're producing organic milk. These are three brothers that came through the master's degree program at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And it was so crucial that that program was there when these three brothers wanted to step back into dairy. They grew up in a dairy, small farm, 45 cows, mom and dad, that kind of thing. They've taken it to a massive scale, but they're doing it with a profitability that's really engaging to the business community because they have their cows, so they milk their cows. They have a pipe that runs underneath the road across their property. It goes into a state-of-the-art cheese-making factory. They make award-winning cheese, and they subcontract, and they provide all the soft cheese, the buffalo mozzarella that you buy at Whole Foods is actually a Crave Brothers soft cheese that was made just north of Exonia in Wisconsin. And then they have this amazing power plant where they take all the manure, the waste of the cows, they pull it together, they siphon off the methane, they turn that into electricity, and that electricity powers their massive acre farm, and they have so much residual electricity that they sell it back to the grid and power about 300 homes in the nearby town. So here's guys that are Wisconsin boys, got their master's degree in dairy here. The technology for this electricity company through Peeper Power, which is headquartered in Milwaukee, was about an hour's drive from where they wanted to change their business model. And when I talked to one of the brothers, he said, well, sure, we're stewards of the land, no question. We'd like our kids to go into dairy and we'd like them to make money. But we're doing it because it's dollars and cents. I mean, you know, it doesn't pay if it doesn't pay. So when you cobble all that together, Organic Valley, what the Crave Brothers are doing, and then Sweetwater Organics and Growing Power, we literally are ground zero internationally for urban sustainable agriculture.
And all of, again, I go back to all of those ancillary businesses that need to support that, whether it's somebody who's making that piece of equipment that makes that power plant work, you know, mm-hmm. or somebody who's making, as you said before, the plastic bag that packs that, or somebody who's making that. We seem to be in a perfect place to really capitalize on all of this.
Deloitte did a study that was commissioned by some Milwaukee folks a while ago, and our food technology is really unparalleled just because it's the next step. The payroll for it is right here. Automated controls. I mean, obviously, Alan Bradley. Food and beverage infrastructure. We have one of the largest subcontractors of sorting and making pie crusts in the country right here. I mean, we've got all kinds of labs that happen in the general area. Years ago, I was in Hooligans and met some friends of friends, and one of the guys said, you know, what do we do? What do you do? One of the guys said, well, I'm a chemist. I do food profiles. I create flavors. The guy that created Cool Ranch Dorita chips was having a beer with me at Hooligans. And this is like 10, 12 years ago or whenever that product came out. Maybe I was in college. It was a long time ago. But I looked at him and I said, I don't know whether to slug you or shake your hand. But the point is, he was, you know, I mean, he was within driving distance, essentially. Those types of flavor profile labs are here because all the raw materials are here. So why would you open up a lab in, I don't know, what's a good example, Texas, where, you know, you can't grow anything but oil and cattle when the corn, the starches, the sugars, the soy, the beets, the carrots, the wheat is all within an hour or two.
And the people.
And the people. And the knowledge base.
Where do you see it going? Do you see that manufacturing base expanding over the next 10, 20 years?
I think there's going to be an adjustment in some of that. I do think that to a greater extent, the era of cheap, abundant calories through production is going to change. It's changing on different levels because people are willing to pay more for higher quality as health costs rise up. and sustainability isn't such a hippy-dippy word, but is just something that people are generally interested in. Look, there's too much political capital on whatever side that you sit for the manufacturing and the production of food here in Wisconsin. Will we continue to be preeminent? Yes. How will that play out? That's anybody's game. Will we continue to be innovators? Absolutely, simply because of the backstory and the brain trust and the hard machinery that we've already got here.
Well, Kyle Cherik, thank you so much for stopping by today. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Kyle Cherik is host of the syndicated television show Wisconsin Foodie, which profiles where our food comes from, the region's artisanal resources, and culinary high points. He's a frequent contributor and speaker on culinary topics and the farm-to-table trend. While Wisconsin may be number one or close to it in growing and producing many foods, a new agricultural report finds there's even more we could be doing. We'll hear about it when Lake Effect returns in a moment on Milwaukee Public Radio.